All right, welcome everyone to today's Google Search Central SEO Office Hours Hangout. This will be the last one of this year, hopefully. Who knows, but most likely. It looks like a bunch of people still managed to join in, even though it's on the last day of the year. Even people in weird time zones. Hi, Michael. So cool. Handful of questions were submitted on YouTube, and we have a bunch of people raising their hands here already. So maybe we'll just go and run through the people that have their hands raised at the moment. Let's see, Ashwani, I think you're first.
Yeah, hi, John. Very good morning.
Hi.
I have a question related to like indexing. Like as what I found. Our blog or pages are not indexing on a regular basis, but their tags are indexed by Google. So I don't understand why tag index first rather than the URL. Why URL is not indexing first?
How do you mean tags?
Like if suppose I have published a blog related to marketing, anything, marketing, SEO, whatever it is. So, and I have added a tag like SEO service, SEO updates, SEO, whatever. And the SEO updates, SEO service is indexed by Google, but the same URL is not indexing by the Google. Why?
How do you mean the tag is indexed by Google?
Like,
do you have separate tag pages or?
Look. For example, your website name is abc.com, okay? And my page is abc.com/SEO updates, okay? And inside that page, I have added a tags called SEO updates, SEO news, okay? So when I try to search whether this page is indexed by Google or not, so what Google is basically saying, like your tags are indexed, it means it shows in archive, like your tags are in indexed, but your URL, the complete URL is not indexed.
I still don't quite understand like what you mean when the tags are indexed. Like where do you see that? Or how do you notice that?
Maybe the tag has a separate URL, right?
Is it like a tag page with a list of the posts that are tagged like that?
No. Like as Mr. Pavin said, that there must be a URL for every tags, but no, there is no any URL for any tags. But still, the tags are indexed by the Google.
And where do you see it that they're indexed? Like what kind of things do you search for, and then you see the
on the Google, like when I search site double colon the URL name, when I put that on the Google, it shows your URL is not indexed, but your tag is indexed. So here I'm a little bit confused, like why Google indexing tags rather than they're not interested to indexing my web page.
I suspect something is being mixed up. So what I would recommend doing here is maybe posting in the Webmaster Help Forum with the exact URLs and the searches that you're doing, just so that other people can take a look and double check to see exactly what is happening, and maybe give you some input on what you could be doing differently. So my guess is that something like the homepage is being indexed with a link to your blog post, or maybe you have a separate tag page where you list all of the blog posts that have that tag, and that page is being indexed. And from a practical point of view, that can sometimes happen, that these are indexed before the actual content. That makes sense, for example, with the homepage, because we usually recrawl the homepage quite often. So we might see the homepage is updated, and a link to your article is there. But the article itself sometimes just takes a little bit longer. So it's not so much that we're indexing the tag itself. It's more that there are different places on your website that refer to the article, and maybe that's what you're seeing.
Okay. I will definitely share the link to the in the community. And cool. My second question is related to same indexing and caching. So sometimes what I found, some of our website, URL is indexed properly, but we are unable to find the cache file.
Okay.
So what is the issue here? Why we are not getting the cached file?
That can happen. That's normal in the sense that the cache pages in the search results are handled separately from the indexing. So it can happen that we have a page in our index that we don't have a cached page for. So if you look for the cache page, it'll say like 404 or whatever. But that's not a sign of a problem. That's essentially just the way that our systems work.
Okay. So it is not a matter of doubt any guy, right? Okay, John. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Sure. It looks like the order got shuffled around a little bit, but since we don't have a ton of people, I'll just go through the order as it is. Let's see, Frank, I think you're up next.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Thank you, John, for working on the 31st of December and taking our questions. I already asked the question on YouTube, so I might simply read it as it is in YouTube. Sure. So I wonder if a poor translation of a new language version can negatively affect the SEO for domains more established main language versions. So let's go with an example. Let's assume that I have an established website in French that exists for a number of years and has reasonable SEO success. And then I want to add a German language version on the same domain. So not the distinct domain, but the same domain. And the website owner uses automated translation, unfortunately, for the German user interface and the German content. So I know that automated translation is considered as automated generated content, and Google doesn't like it. So it would seem normal that Google probably doesn't appreciate the new German version so much. But my question mainly targets the established French version, which has done reasonably well so far. I wonder if this poor German language version can influence negatively the success of the more established French version. So in other words, do you consider the language quality of each language version on the same domain independently, or can there be some sort of negative or bad neighborhood effect, so that if one language version is of poor quality, all the other language versions on the same domain suffer as well?
I guess the short answer is yes. The main issue here is less about these being translated versions of the content, but more that for some things, we look at the quality of the site overall. And when we look at the quality of the site overall, if you have significant portions that are lower quality, it doesn't matter so much for us like why they would be lower quality, if they're just bad translations or if they're terrible content or whatever. But if we see that there are significant parts that are lower quality, then we might think, overall, this website is not so fantastic as we thought. And that can have effects in different places across the website. So in short, I guess if you have a very low quality translation that's also indexed and that's also very visible in search, then that can definitely pull down the good quality translation as well, or the good quality original content that you also have.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Very good. Can I ask one follow-up question on this, maybe?
Sure.
Because obviously, I'm working in an SEO agency, and what frequently happens is that clients will give us, you know, what they consider the SEO texts as to translate with SEO optimization at the same time. And then they have somebody else doing the translation of texts which don't have SEO importance or of the user interface. And unfortunately, very frequently, they choose low-cost translation services to do that part of the job. And can you tell us something about how Google assesses if something is an automated translation or if something is of poor quality? You know, if the entire user interface, for example, is of poor quality, can this be balanced out, so to speak, by SEO texts with high quality, things like that?
I don't know if we have anything that specifically looks for low quality translations. So it's probably, at least the way that I understand it, it's more a matter of us trying to understand the quality of the website overall. And that's usually not something where there are individual things that we could just point at and say, like, oh, if you have five misspellings on a page, that's a sign of low quality. It's like these things happen individually. And all of these factors, I think, individually are hard to say that they're a sign of something being low quality, but rather we have to take everything together and then figure out what the mix is together. And that's also a reason why sometimes when you significantly improve the quality of a website overall, or when things get significantly worse, it just takes a lot of time for our systems to figure out, like, oh, overall, the view of this website is now better or worse. So from that point of view, it's not that we have anything specific that we could point at. The best that I could do if you wanted individual items is to look at the blog post we did on core updates, I think last year sometime, or the year before that, which has a bunch of different questions in there, which you could ask yourself about the website, which you could also go and look at together with maybe, I don't know, some testers or some users to get external feedback as well. And it's not so much that we have algorithms that try to like copy that directly, but it's kind of like almost like a guiding direction where we say, well, this is the direction we want to go, and then we will work to make our algorithms try to figure that out.
What we usually say to our clients is that, you know, we as a human user, we would feel annoyed by the quality that you have. And probably the search engines see it the same way. Would you concur that this is a good way to put it?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. The other thing that I think is really important is that you have objective feedback in this regard, in that if you're working on the website and it's like your baby, then it's going to be hard to accept that people don't like the color scheme or that the design looks outdated or not professional enough. Like these small subjective things. So it's really, I think, important to have someone external, someone who is objective, to give you this kind of feedback. And maybe even the connection between SEO agency and client is almost like too personal, in that you're very devoted to that. So maybe in these kind of situations, it would make sense to say, well, we will put together a small panel of people who are not involved with your website, and they will give us objective feedback. And it's not that we want you to make these changes, but objectively, people have said this is a problem or this is an area for improvement.
Okay. Great.
Can I just say something, John?
Sure.
Or Frank, if you say those pages aren't the pages that are being badly translated, if they're not that important, then do you need them indexed? Why show Google a bad version? Why not just let users read it if they need to and then just no index it? And then the overall quality is still, unless I'm wrong, John, is that not a an idea? If you say they're not important, if it's like the directions page or if it's the terms and conditions that no one, that Google doesn't
read. Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's not only such unimportant pages like the directions page. I don't think that you would suggest to not index the homepage, for example, or
But you did say that it's only the important pages they will pay to have you guys translate properly?
Oh, the idea would be to tell the client, okay, to invest money only in the important pages. Well, then it gets really subjective also, I think, because they have a bunch of product pages which are of poor quality. And so where do you draw the line? What is an important product page? What is not an important product page? So I appreciate the input, Rob. I will keep that in mind. But many times I think it's rather that, you know, the rest, which is not SEO text, so to speak, is taken or is assigned to a low-cost translation service or even automated translation, and then that's the case for all the rest of the website, unfortunately.
But it's the same types of pages. Some can have good, some can have bad, but the type, whether it's category or product, can be the same. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah, I will keep that possibility
everything I said
in mind. Thank you very much for the input.
Yeah, I think the aspect of not just looking at the quantity of pages, but rather the kind of relative importance, I think that does help a little bit, though. And like, especially if you have a limited translation budget, then really focusing to make sure that the important pages, the pages that get a lot of traffic, that they're actually well translated, I think that goes a long way. Because when we look at the quality of a website overall, it's not that we count the pages and we determine the quality of each page and make kind of like an average like that. It's more that we try to figure out, well, how does this website represent itself externally? And that's focused quite a bit on the pages that are more important, the pages that get a lot of traffic. So kind of like how Rob mentioned, that if you can make sure that the important pages are well translated, then even if the less important pages are low quality translations, you can get almost like, I don't know, 90% of the way there.
Okay.
It really depends on the website itself and the budgets and how it's organized. If you just have one person translating or one agency translating everything, then obviously you can't tell them like, oh, just do a bad job on these pages. But if you can split that up, then sometimes it makes sense to focus on the important stuff first.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much, John. That was a very, very important input for the end of the year. Thank you very much. Guten Rutsch ins neue Jahr.
Danke, gleichfalls. Cool. Rob, I think you were up next anyway, so please continue.
We with our US site, we previously had a problem with we delivered IP-related content. So we would detect where people were from, and it would show them the closest products to them. But then that resulted in us essentially Google indexing our site as if we were exclusively in California. So with the newer site, we're not going to do that. But if we ask for the user's input, you know, click here to sort by closest to me, or we ask for an action first, is that 100% safe, or can Google also take that action with its bot and we could have the same problem?
I think it depends on how you implement it.
Is there a delivery system that's better, whether it's a click, or what coding type to use, whether it's Ajax or whatever? What do we do?
Yeah, so if it's a button and it goes through a form, that kind of thing, then almost certainly we wouldn't do that. I don't think Googlebot clicks on anything like that. If it's a link that we can follow, then we might follow that link and then end up indexing the linked pages as well. Which
but as long as it pops up with an overlay or whatever that is that say, allow our site to use your location.
Yeah. If it uses the browser permissions dialogue thing, then I don't think we ever accept any permissions. It's something you can probably easily test. But from my understanding, when it comes to rendering, all of these permission dialogues are essentially ignored and not processed. So if it's location or pop-ups or I don't know what they all are, those things are essentially ignored on our side.
Okay. Thanks.
Cool. Praveen.
Hi, Joe.
So,
So the question is about the pages that are not indexed, basically. So the thing is, we have a site where there are some 100 pages that are not indexed. They are tagged with MetaRobot's not indexed tag, but they are accessible to the users. They can access those pages. Now, the thing is, there are a lot of good authority sites in the industry that are actually linking back to, you know, these pages that are actually not indexed. So though we are getting referral traffic and all that stuff, but from SEO benefit, you know, link benefit point of view, we are not getting anything because obviously they are not indexed. So the question was, what if we you know, set 301 redirect for Googlebot on these URLs to some relevant pages, will that be, you know, against Google guidelines? Because users can still access those pages, but for Googlebot, there will be a 301 redirect.
It seems kind of borderline. I don't know. I mean, it also feels like the kind of thing where you might just use a rel canonical and leave it at that to kind of point at the page that you do want to have indexed. Because if you're doing this kind of redirect specifically for Googlebot, then I think on the one hand, from a technical point of view, it's very easy to get that wrong and to have something mess up. And I mean, from a user point of view, I don't think it would be a big issue because we would probably only index the target page anyway. So it's not that a user would click on a link in the search results and end up on one page that looks very different from what they clicked on. So on the one hand, there, I think it feels like there are easier solutions to this with a rel canonical to do essentially the same thing, but I don't think it would be like super problematic.
Yeah, so, we thought about canonical too, but then we thought it might, like, Google might ignore it because the two pages might not be exactly same, or so there could be an issue because one page is more dependent on JavaScript thing and other is more HTML.
I don't know. From my point of view, I would prefer to try to use the rel canonical as much as possible, just to make sure that you don't have to set up any separate infrastructure to cloak to Googlebot and kind of all of the problems associated with that. Because it feels like you have to put a lot of work in to make that work the way that you want it. And the other approach is just so much simpler and so much easier and less error prone. So I would try to stick with that.
Yeah, so from options point of view, we got both, but just wanted to confirm, if we go with 301, will it be against Google guidelines? Or
like, no, it won't be against Google guidelines. Because what would be problematic is if this page were indexable, and you redirected kind of depending on the user agent, then that could be seen as a kind of a sneaky redirect. But since we're indexing the target page, then it doesn't really matter what you do on the pages that lead up to that page, provided that they're not indexed.
Sure, got it. Thank you. And very happy New Year.
Thanks, you too. Yeah. Let's see, Sanjay.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is related to hidden text. If a text block is available in source code, but for user there is no way to see that content, consider that text in its index?
Maybe. I mean, if it's in normal HTML on the page and it's just hidden, then it's possible that we pick that up and use it for indexing. I don't think it's a great idea to do it like that on purpose, but it can happen, and it is something to keep in mind, especially if you're trying to avoid indexing some specific kind of text. So, for example, one thing that I saw recently is someone had an error message in the part of the page that was actually hidden. And it was only shown if there was actually an error on the page, but it was always on the page. And our systems picked that up and thought, well, this page is an error page. We can ignore it. So from that point of view, it's something where if you want it indexed, then make sure it's visible and kind of indexable. If you don't want it indexed, then make sure it's not indexable and not actually on the page at all.
Actually, the situation is that on our product category pages, we have fixed load for every product. And in that fixed load, we can show like only one or two lines of description, product description. But in our source code, the developer have mentioned like complete description, like around 50, 60 words of description in source code. But this is not visible on desktop. On desktop, it is visible only for like one or two lines. And on mobile devices, it only 5 or 6 word appears for users. And there is no read more button as well. Is there any situation that Google might penalize also us, like for cloaking or something like that?
I don't think so. I mean, it sounds like it's also text that's related to your product anyway. So from that point of view, it's not very misleading. It's I think just suboptimal from your side, like adding a read more button or some kind of a link to expand the description sounds like a simple solution to that. I wouldn't worry that Google will penalize a website for something like that.
Okay. So I mean, my primary question was like, will Google consider that text in its index?
Yes.
So yes, it will consider. OK, thank you.
Cool. Let's see, Aline.
Hi, John. Happy New Year to you in advance.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. So we have a situation where we have a news website that's one of the leading financial publications in the country. They've done well always. And there is another sister website, completely unrelated. But again, you know, it's a smaller site, smaller traffic, a smaller number of stories daily, smaller number of stories overall. The bigger website, the financial publication, over time, we suspected that previous stakeholders, they did some nefarious activities. We think it's penalized, but there's no way for us to know that it's been penalized. So, but lately, what we noticed was that the other website sometimes takes stories from the financial publication with attribution. And on the lesser website, on Google News, it always seems to end up ranking higher. And we realize if the smaller website with a lower page rank potentially is ranking higher, we figured that something is afoot or something's amiss, and we don't know how to go about it. I've disavowed a lot of links, over 3,000 links, a lot of domains as well. We realize a lot of traffic is coming from Blogspot. You know, some of them are shady. We realize there was about 200-300 URLs that were marketing related. We blocked those about 6 to 8 months ago. We still are not able to rank higher. In fact, what happens is on Google News, we'll have a story, we'll be the exclusive, we'll be the first one, you know, the whole E thing will be trustworthy, we're exclusive, we'll rank very high. And as soon as even this lesser website or other websites publish the same story, even if they do a spin on our take, or if they're a genuine story, or a copy of, or you know, extrapolating from our story, when they do that, they suddenly start ranking higher, and we'll immediately start disappearing into oblivion. And now I'm tasked with, you know, improving the SEO. The editors are frustrated. We put a story, it's original, and I'm kind of feeling out of options on what to do. And the second part of the question is, you know, with the disavow list, there's two ways to get the list. One is on these SEO tools, the paid tools. They come up with a lot of URLs that don't show up in the search console. So we're looking at those lists, adding them to our disavow list and adding them. Should we be looking at both sides or not? And what are my options? And if there's any recommended reading or any, how should I go about this? Thank you.
Yeah, I think you posted on YouTube as well with the domain, right?
Yes.
So I took a quick look at the domain beforehand. And I don't see any kind of manual action or penalty associated with that domain. I also don't see any issue with regards to the links for that domain. So my suspicion is you probably don't need to put a lot of time into the disavow work, and probably even just focusing on Search Console links, if you actually find something really problematic there, would be enough. So that's kind of, I think the from the overall point of view there, I don't see anything really holding back this website in Search. The main thing I did notice, though, is that you have geotargeting set up in Search Console for Pakistan. I don't know if that's by design, if that's something that you're trying to do. If you want to make a general English-speaking news website, then probably it makes sense to turn off the geotargeting there. So that might be something that can help you. The other thing I think that I just realized in listening to your question is that you're focusing very much on Google News. And while Google News does a lot of things similar to Google Search, I don't know if it does everything in the same way. And in particular, with regards to the ranking there, I don't know if there might be like separate things that Google News would do that doesn't apply to Google Search. So what I would also do there is try to contact someone on the Google News side. In the Help Center for Google News Publishers, I believe there's a form that you can use to contact the folks on the Google News side and to try to get some input from them as well. So that's kind of the direction I would take there. I think when it comes to Search, the geotargeting, if you want to target countries other than Pakistan, kind of like a general English-speaking news website, then I would definitely turn that off, because that can have an effect there in that it really focuses on Pakistan and then slightly focuses less on other countries.
All right, I'll do that. Thanks very much. Just a quick question. How soon would these settings take effect? Let's say I make it international now. How soon can I expect to see the results or the impact?
I don't know. My guess is it'll be anywhere from a week or two to maybe a month or two. So that's kind of the time frame that I suspect it takes for something like the geotargeting setting to change. With regards to a news website, I suspect it'll be a little bit faster than usual, just because with a news website, we would focus on the newer content. And with the newer content, we would see the setting very quickly. So probably more on the shorter side for news website, but I don't know all of the systems that are involved with geotargeting settings changes.
Okay, and one follow-up as well. We are considering doing the instant API where we update you. The documentation says that that's relevant for jobs, but someone also on the same community, I think there was another question, and they alluded if it can be used for news. Is it okay to use for news? We have been using it. And the second part is sometimes when we do use it, we publish a story, then we unpublish it, and then we republish it during the editing phase, and then we finally publish it. So is that a concern? And is that API relevant for news?
It's not really relevant for news. It is really meant for job-based content. And I believe it's also quite limited in terms of how many URLs you can send there by default. So I would not assume that changes anything for news.
We did notice, oddly enough, that when we did it, we indexed a bit faster than if we just waited for the crawler to come around based on the sitemap and the file. I mean, this is anecdotal, but we did notice it. Minute or two, which is kind of strange. But again, if it hits a limit on the number of queries per day or the API limits, I guess it wouldn't really work for large numbers.
Yeah. I think what you would definitely see is that we will crawl the URL very quickly, because we need to pick up the structured data to understand if this is actually a job posting or not. So the crawling side, you should probably see a change, but I don't expect to see a change on the indexing side for that. But it's also something where, from our point of view, it's not that we would penalize a site for doing this wrong. So Yeah.
Okay. Well, that answers it. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Cool.
Thanks, John.
All right. Stein, I think.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Hi. I did a website migration 3 months ago to a new domain. I just cloned the whole website. I had all internal and external links updated and they redirected to the new one. I had AMP enabled on the old one, and my old AMP articles are always ranked in Google Top Stories. So now my new one is not. I have AMP disabled right now on my new domain because I didn't like it and it gives too much trouble. Just, I don't want to use it anymore. So, but AMP is not needed to include in Top Stories right now. So my question is why my new domain is not ranked in Google Top Stories. I want to add to that that I rank on the Google page on my main keyword on top, like number 2. And also my articles are shown in Google News app and on Google Discovery. So I have quite a strong authority on my main keyword. So I don't understand why I'm not displayed in Google Top Stories. Can you explain that?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I think if you're doing a domain migration and switching off AMP at the same time, then especially with something like Top Stories, that might be a little bit confusing. But it sounds like otherwise things are being picked up well. So probably you're on the right track there. The thing with Top Stories in particular is it's an organic search feature, and it's not something that a site just gets because they deserve it, but it's more that we try to figure out what we should be showing in a Top Story section. And sometimes that can be more, sometimes that can be less, sometimes that includes content from, I don't know, individual sites or individual types of articles, and sometimes less so. Mm-hmm. What I would consider doing here is on the one hand, giving it a little bit more time. The other thing is to double check things around the page experience setting, because like we mentioned in the blog post, when we turned that off, we essentially said, well, with a pages with a very good page experience score, they can essentially appear in Top Stories as well. So it's not the case that we would take any kind of page and show it in a Top Stories, but rather we would use kind of like a page experience score, almost like as a kind of a ranking factor to determine what we would show within the Top Stories section.
So in my site vitality, so all my URLs are in the green.
Okay.
So all
that sounds good.
So there's not like 99.4% of my I have good 99.4% of good URLs. So that's all green there with no specific marks or whatever. So that's all in place.
Okay, and in that case, your site already has field data as well.
Yeah. I'm qualified. Yeah, everything seems fine. Like I said, I'm on the main keyword. I get just on number 2. So I have a very strong authority on my main keyword. So that's why I just don't get it.
Yeah. My suspicion is maybe it just takes longer.
Because it's a new domain. Yeah. Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah. Maybe with like the domain migration, it just takes a little bit longer to kind of get settled in there. It sounds like everything else is kind of okay, and especially if you're being shown in Google News and Discover as well,
yeah,
then it's like things are essentially set up well. So my guess is it's more a matter of time. The thing also with Top Stories in particular is I'm not aware of anything manual on our side where we would control that. Or we would say,
is that an automatic process? Or
yes.
Okay, so how do I need to imagine it? There's something like a superpower bar that's like going from left to right, or from yes, ping. Okay, we display it now. How is that working?
I mean, it's tricky with regards to things around quality signals, because they just take a lot of time to collect. Mm. And they take a lot of time for us to be fairly certain that we can trust them. Okay. And I suspect it's just something around those lines.
Okay, so your advice is just keep doing what you're doing. I'm writing new content every day, so it's maybe like in a couple of months it will be fixed, probably.
I would say if you don't see any change within a month, then let me know and send me the URL, and I can double check with the team here. But especially if you're saying the migration took place, like, I don't know,
September 8th, to be exact.
And especially if you moved away from AMP, then it feels like something that just takes a little bit of
okay.
time.
So how do I send the URL if nothing has changed? What's the best thing to do?
You can drop the link here in the chat, or you can send me a note on Twitter.
Okay, no problem. Okay, thank you. One other short question about I'll write about streaming services. I always wrote about one specific streaming services, but now I added a second one. But now all of a sudden, Google is adding a keyword in my URLs. When it's like, I think it's like too short, maybe Google thinks it's too short, and it adds my main keyword in articles from the second streaming services. So that don't make sense at all. So now you see, you know, an article about streaming services A, and it puts a keyword from streaming service B beside it. Because for a long period of time, I only wrote about streaming service A. You understand?
I don't understand what you mean. Is it like the title or?
Yeah, I'm talking about titles. Yeah,
title. Okay. Title.
So it adds keywords. It adds keywords from streaming services B to the article title from streaming services A.
Okay.
Randomly, so Google's probably used to you only write about streaming services A. So. You know, so it's very confusing. So I can send it to you, but it don't looks good in the serps. It's quite confusing.
Yeah, if you can drop a link here in the chat, then I can pick that up afterwards.
Yeah. I will do that.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. Thank you, John.
Thanks.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye. Let me run through some of the submitted questions very briefly, and then we can get more to live questions as well, and anything else. We'll see. It looks like a bunch of the questions were already submitted, so probably similar. The first one I have here is, I am currently improving the website quality after I have multiple pages getting discovered but not indexed. I wonder in what time frame I can expect Google to pick up quality changes. We talked about this briefly before, and essentially making bigger quality changes on a website takes quite a bit of time for Google systems to pick that up. So I would assume that this is something more along the lines of several months and not several days. So that's kind of the time frame that I would aim for here. And because it takes such a while to get quality changes picked up, my recommendation would be not to make like small changes and wait and see if it's good enough, but rather really make sure that if you're making significant quality changes, make sure that it's like really good quality changes, and not that you're going to have to go back and improve that again. Because if it takes a few months, you don't want to wait a few months and then decide, oh, yeah, I actually need to change some other pages too. Really make sure that you have everything covered. The translations part we talked about. Then a question about e-commerce, I guess.
Sorry, John, may interrupt. Because this ties back to the quality issue that you were discussing with the translation topic. So that would rather hint towards, well, if you think now that the poor quality of the translation is the cause of maybe the entire site going down in the search results, then I understand that you would rather advocate, well, if you now go back and retranslate text, do it the right way for the entire site, and do not do penny pinching efforts where you say, okay, we will concentrate on the 12 main pages and then we might see if that works or not, rather really do good work for the entire site. Is that correct?
I think if you're in a situation where your site dropped in visibility and you think it's because the overall quality, then I would definitely go and try to do as much as possible. if you're in a situation where you're expanding a website and adding translations, then it feels like something where you could say we will initially focus on the more important parts. But if it's really a matter of like things dropped and you really need to fix this, then I would try to fix it across the board. Yeah.
OK, great. Thank you very much.
Then back to the e-commerce question. I sell handmade shoes. They're all produced for a specific age range within the same material, technique, et cetera, but only the design is different. Would it be counted as duplicate content by Google if I write one and only high-quality product description for all, or is it better to have unique descriptions for each one, which reduces the quality of the content? I don't know if like the unique descriptions would reduce the quality of the content. So from that point of view, I would kind of argue that you can have both unique descriptions and high quality descriptions. So that kind of that last part I would ignore. But the general question with regards to duplicate content is, we would probably see this as duplicate content, but we would not demote a website because of duplicate content. So from a practical point of view, what would happen is if someone is searching for a piece of text that is within this duplicated description on your pages, then we would recognize that this piece of text is found on a bunch of pages on your website, and we would try to just pick maybe one or two pages from your website to show. So it's not that we would demote your website or kind of penalize the website in any way because it has duplicate content. It's more from a practical point of view. We recognize you have this content on a lot of your pages. So if someone is searching specifically for that content, it doesn't make sense for us to show all of those pages. And that's kind of reasonable. When people are searching for a piece of content, they don't need to find all of the pages within your website that have that piece of content. The thing I think to kind of watch out for here is if you don't have anything in the textual content at all that covers kind of the visual elements of your products, then it makes it very hard for us to actually show these properly in the search results. So for example, if you mentioned you have handmade shoes, if you have blue shoes and red shoes, and you never mention which color these shoes are in, then if someone is searching for blue shoes, we might think, well, your pages are not that relevant because you don't mention the word blue anywhere on your pages. So that's kind of the angle I would take here is it's fine to have parts of the description duplicated, but I would definitely make sure that you at least have something in there that really has text about the visual elements that are unique to those individual products that you're selling. So that's kind of the direction I would go. Let's see. I have a question about a notification from Search Console. It's about my author archive pages that are missing a field URL. I would like to noindex my author archive pages. Will it solve a problem, or will it have an impact on my site appearing in search? The author archive pages don't have any keywords anyway. Are they important for EAT? Will my EAT score go down if I noindex the author archive pages? So we don't have an EAT score. So from that point of view, you don't have to worry about that. In general, the notification you received in Search Console is probably about structured data that you're using on these pages. And if you don't want those pages indexed, then by no indexing those pages, you will remove that notification as well. If you're using some kind of a plugin on your site that generates the structured data there, then maybe you can disable it for those author pages, and it'll be fixed as well. Or maybe you can fix the fields that the structured data provides, and that will also solve the problem. My guess is that the structured data that you're using on these pages is not critical for your site. It's not something that we would show in the search results directly anyway. So from that point of view, probably you're fine with either removing the structured data from those pages, no indexing those pages if they're not critical for your site. All of that would be fine. I think I would see this slightly differently if I knew that this was a site that really focused a lot on the authority and kind of the knowledge and the name of the authors, where if people are actively searching for the name of the author, then your collection of content by that author might be actually useful to have in the search results. So for those kind of sites, I think it would be useful to keep that index. But then you would probably already want to keep that index because they're getting traffic from search. So if you're not seeing any traffic at all to these author pages, and they're just random people who are writing for your blog or something like that, then probably no indexing them would be fine. Is linking pagination pages sequentially, showing only the next and previous, better than showing more number of pages on a paginated page? I don't think any of these approaches are really better or worse, in the sense that for the longest time, we didn't have any guidance on pagination. And it seemed to just work well for search. So it felt like something where we don't actually have to tell people what exactly to do. The important thing, I think, about pagination to keep in mind is that these are essentially just links between pages. And for the most part, our systems don't go in and try to figure out, oh, this is a paginated set of pages, so I will do something special here. But rather, they see links to other pages. And you can have one page that links to kind of like the next page and the previous page, which is just kind of like other pages and links. Or you can have one page that links to a bunch of next pages if you have kind of like a set of next pages. And both of those are reasonable approaches to take. In that we can crawl and find all of those pages. If you link sequentially, what will generally happen is the first page of your set will have a lot stronger signals, in the sense that your main content links to the first page, and then it kind of like incrementally drops and drops and drops as it goes through the pagination set. So you're kind of focusing more on the first pages of the set. Whereas if you link to a bunch of different pages immediately, then you're kind of like spreading it out a lot faster. But I think overall, these kind of like almost like SEO tweaks, they don't play a big role for most sites, in the sense that we can find all of these pages anyway. We can find them and follow the links on those pages as well. It's not something that you need to do in any particular way.
A quick follow-up on this. So we have about thousands of authors, and each author, some of them might have hundreds of pages. Now, when a new story comes in, page two changes because everything gets sort of cascading down. In that case, does Google recrawl everything? Or and we know that the links on the older, on the deeper pages have already been indexed. Is there any guidelines around that? Or should we just expect Google to recrawl because everybody gets reshuffled every day across hundreds? What?
Yeah, I think in practice, what you'll notice is that we will crawl the first page of the set a little bit more often than the other pages. And we'll probably recrawl the other pages from time to time, but we won't recrawl them immediately. So probably you would see that also if you look at the log files for your site and kind of follow along what happens when a new article is posted and it's listed on these pages. How does the crawling of the pagination actually change? And my guess is 90% of the crawling will be on the first pages of those sets.
So it would be all right to put a no crawl on, let's say, after page number 100, you know, because it's
sure.
Visible. All right.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Cool. I think we're kind of at time. I have one more hand raised, and then I can pause the recording for YouTube, and we can continue chatting a bit if any of you want to. Shyam, I think.
Hi, John.
Hi.
Thank you for taking. My question is around the performance aspect. I know the page experience in Google Search Console and the Core Web Vitals information is from the Chrome UX dataset. But when I look at mobile browsers specifically and the mobile browser shares, like for US, the Safari and other browsers have a share of 60%. Does that mean still it's only the other 40% field data which is used for the core web vitals and page experience, or does Google do something else to account for the other browsers' page experience and core web vitals too?
I don't know all the details with regards to Chrome, but my understanding is that this is really just based on the field data that we see, which is based on the Chrome user experience report data, which is a subset of the Chrome users. So there are also specific requirements with regards to kind of the settings that are enabled for the user, if they're sending performance data back or not, which are also required there. And from that point of view, it's not like all Chrome users, but also just a subset of the Chrome users. For the most part, I think it's still representative, because browsers tend to be kind of very similar with regards to their qualities. And if anything, the more high-end devices, which sometimes the iOS devices are, tend to be a little bit faster. So it's something where it's not that I think we're skewing our data in a bad way. So that's at least as far as I understand it. I don't know all of the details with regards to Chrome user experience report data, but it would surprise me if there were like approximations that were kind of applied there to say, oh, well, we will just make it so many percent more because we think that other users might be like that. I think it's really just based on the data that we've collected.
OK, so it's only the Chrome user data. Thank you.
Cool. OK, so with that, let me pause the recording here. It's been great having you all here. And even on the last day of the year, I don't think I will make more of these office hours this year. But next year, you can count on it. We'll definitely have more then. So let me pause the recording here and wish you all a fantastic new year. And if you're watching this on YouTube, feel free to join in one of the future episodes where we can talk about your questions as well. So thank you and goodbye.